What's up, everybody? I'm Zach Witowicz.
And I'm Charlie Burtwistle.
This is take two of the intro.
This is take two. We're
catching people off guard today.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's wondering. Everybody is wondering what happened on take one. They'll never know.
That's between us, and that's it.
It's just between us. Someday we'll release a B-roll, and they'll hear all our mistakes, and it'll be hilarious.
That's our going out. Excuse me. Wow.
Yeah, just don't make us do a take three, Zach.
Yeah.
Hold those sneezes and coughs.
See, it could have been what was the take one. It was just allergies.
Because the reason we need to nail this intro is we have two very, very exciting guests today who deserve a perfect intro to lead into what is sure to be a perfect episode. Zach, who do we have today?
We got Blair Freeman, local building group here in Omaha, Nebraska. They've been on the building code before. We got Ashley and Miranda, co-CEOs, down the street from us here in Omaha. I'm very excited to talk to them and catch up with what they've been doing since we last talked to them. We're going to get a little update. And Ashley was also at IBS on our panel. So we can get a little bit of a recap of what her experience was like. And as we like to do, it was fantastic, Charlie. You were dearly missed.
I'm sure. I'm excited to get caught up here in this episode. They're doing a ton of exciting things. I think we're constantly talking about, you know, the labor shortage, culture across businesses. How do we ensure that we're able to attract and retain employees? We've had numerous episodes about it because it's the number one thing that I think that we can solve collectively as an industry right now. So excited to talk to them, and they're doing a fantastic job leading from the front. So take a ton of notes, and let's figure out how to solve this problem together.
Let's welcome them in. Hey, Ashley and Rando, welcome back to the Building Code. Officially, as I like to do, alumni, two-time here Good on the time. Building Code. It's great
Thank
to see you.
We've missed you guys.
Wow. Yeah. Missed you too. Absolutely. It's a distinguished, very honored, prestigious group of multiple guests on the Building Code. Not to say that our single guests aren't great, but obviously you guys are so good that we wanted to have you back. For the people at home listening that weren't fortunate enough to listen to the first episode of recording, would love you guys to just do quick intros, who you are, a little bit about Blair Freeman, and how you got to where you're at today.
Yeah, I'm Ashley Kuhn. I am the co-CEO. We do this together through and through of Blair Freeman. I'll let her take from here.
And I'm Miranda Adams. I am the co-CEO of Blair Freeman, and we are a 100% women-owned, 100% Black-owned construction and owner's rep company here in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah,
How
local.
How did we get our start? Problems local. Yeah, we got our start from a problem project that we put our heads together and solved. And from there, the rest is history.
Here we are.
Yeah, fantastic. You guys have a ton of energy. Great background, by the way. We were talking about that.
If you're not watching on YouTube, now would be a fantastic time to switch over and check out the background.
That's right. That's right. And what we brought you on today to talk a little bit about, obviously, is not only Blair Freeman, but, you know, we just had the International Builder Show and really want to get into kind of what your experience is. I want to know, like, have you gone before? Are you a longtime attendees? Is this your first time? Tell us a little bit about your experience.
Well, I will say that I wasn't able to attend. I had a speaking engagement at my alma mater at UNL. And so I wasn't able to go. So I sent Ashley and she rocked it. And I know she's going to tell you all the awesome things, but I'm going next year. Yes. Next year I'm going.
Yes. So no, I had never been. I have been to other conferences kind of similar to that in Vegas. So we send our team every year to one that's called ICSC. Mm. And so I was aware of how massive Las Vegas Convention Center is. But it was a good time. We definitely will be back. I came back and told them that we have to be there every year. It was awesome.
And Ashley, you not only were you at IBS, but you were on one of the panels. How was that experience? What did you talk through? Was this kind of your first time?
Definitely not my first panel at all. getting ready to retire from panels. No, I'm kidding. but we talked a lot similar to what we're going to talk about on this podcast. Labor shortages, culture, how we do what we do day in and day out, some of the lessons learned along the way. Really cool. It was fun. And it's also really cool to see Builder Trends presence in such a massive convention. You guys had a huge presence there.
Yeah, I like to call it shock and awe. You know, it's just like blitz them with the Apple Store strategy. Our marketing team spends.
Yes.
And it's a vibe for sure.
It is a vibe. Music and snacks and
everything,
all kinds of stuff going on,
swag and free stuff. I mean, it was
free stuff.
Yeah,
it was everything.
Our marketing team, who also runs, you know, whenever we're on the podcast, we got to give them a huge shout out. They make this thing work and they kill it at IBS. You see the best of it. So thank you for the appreciation, Courtney and Nicole and Danielle and everybody that makes it happen. It's a lot of fun. Thanks for stopping by and checking it out. And you also, you know, I'm curious, since it was your first time and it was a spectacle, that was my reaction too. Let's kind of focus in, like, what were your takeaways? What do you look back on and think, okay, this was worth going to if you had never been before?
I think it's just seeing the emerging trends that are coming. That's always really helpful when you're, especially when you're guiding people through the construction process. It's kind of cool to see the emerging trends, what's going to come through, what do you need to be training your team on? I think that's the coolest part. And that's why I was like, we have to get our team out here to see. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to go someday. I was also stuck back.
You went last year.
I did go last year. I did not.
Stop it. Stop it, Charlie. We're not going to do this today or you're getting old. We'll let you go one time.
We can't have
it. Don't mislead our listeners. Yeah.
Party.
Yeah.
But I do want to segue into a little bit what you talked about on the panel and the topic for today's conversation, which is the labor shortage. What's kind of the current landscape of the labor shortage in kind of the residential and commercial construction industries where you guys focus? What are you seeing? Is it improving, kind of a steady decline, or where are we currently at?
It's a steady decline. You know, we've just had that push, you know, 90s, 80s, where everybody was going to college. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely have a shortage on skilled trades. And so you're just seeing a lot of retiring happening of the skilled trades, and there's not enough folks to backfill. And so it's going to be that as the boomers start to retire and continue to retire, it's going to be a steady decline.
Yeah. I talked to, so my dad taught building construction in high school for the past 20 years, recently retired, well, sub-retired, because now he's just substitute teaching every other day anyways. But that was something that
Bless him.
I got to meet him at IBS.
Zach did.
That you weren't there at. Anyway.
Sounds like he was a huge hit. I had 20 people.
He was.
Could be like, I love your dad.
Yeah, yeah. We're like, how do we replace your dad with you?
Yeah. But something he always said is just the biggest thing that you need right now to get into a skilled trade industry is just showing up. That's kind of where the bar is at right now. And, you know, really continuing to push younger folks to explore that as an option. But I think a lot of it also is on, you know, the industry as a whole of how do we reinvent and ensure that those opportunities exist for people, you know, fresh out of high school, fresh out of college, and how do we start beginning to replace the labor that's retiring across the industry right now. So curious what sort of kind of strategies or initiatives you guys have implemented to try to address that within your own company.
Well, I think it starts with conversations like these, right? So you're talking to people, we're talking about the shortages, you're having conversations with students who are younger and younger. I mean, and that's one thing that we've noticed. You got to start early. So it may not necessarily be waiting until they're about to graduate high school. You may have to start talking to kids in middle school. Like, hey, this is what construction looks like, because a lot of times kids are starting to form what they want to do or thinking about things that they're interested in middle school, beginning of high school. And so if you start saying, hey, construction is a great industry, there's so many things that you can do, there's so many skilled trades, there's so much money to be made, there's so many projects out here, and kind of introduce it to them early, then you have the opportunity to kind of get it in their head like, aha, this could be something that I'm good at. These are some skills that I have, that attention to detail, that problem solving. Some of those things, they just translate so well. And so getting the kids younger is a big one.
Yeah. And I also think culture is a huge one. You know, gone are the days where, you know, any of your staff would be on a job site and get their lunch and go to their truck and eat their lunch by themselves. And that's the job that people want to do day in and day out. People want to have, they want to have space, they want to have place, they want to have community in what they're doing, even if it's just two of them on the job site. And so what we've learned is that creating that community of within our company, within our trade partners and our subcontractors and all of that has been really impactful, because that makes it so that they want to show up. You know, we find subcontractors that'll say like, I'm not going to that job for 4 days because I hate everybody that's on it.
Right.
Or the electrician's bothering me, or the plumber's not doing what he's supposed to be. And then on ours, it's more of a community of folks that it's not unusual to see them have a drink after 5 p.m. together. And that for us, that's been a really big game changer, is creating that culture.
Did you guys, when you founded Blair Freeman, did you learn that? Or is that something that you intentionally was like, as part of your business values, you want to create that community environment?
It was definitely very intentional from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Ashley and I, we've come from, you know, different careers, corporate previously, and you learn what you love mm-hmm. and what people are drawn to and what you've seen work. And so when we started the company, that was one of the biggest things, was family is one of our core values. And when we say family, we're just not talking about our immediate family. We're talking about trade partners, employees, clients, everybody out there. And so we knew, culture was the biggest thing, because that's how you retain good people, good clients, good mm-hmm. trade partners, is just making everybody feel like a family and having that positive culture. So No, it was definitely, when we started, we were like, we're doing this and we're not budging on it.
Yeah. It also helps you to have a pulse on what people have going on in their lives without having to be too intrusive. And it helps us navigate those waters where I think maybe historically what you have going on at home is what you have going on at home. And if you have, the world is falling apart behind you, work didn't care. Mm-hmm. And for us, we care about both sides of that, because it impacts how people show up every day. And sometimes what is huge to you at home is something that we can fix in 2 seconds. And it really changes how people operate on a day-to-day basis. So it really was very intentional. It's probably our number one intention coming in for was sure. family.
I love that. And I think that's been a shift that Zach and I have experienced just by hosting this podcast. Everyone that we talk to, of that intentionality to not just how we're running our business or not just how we're building our projects, but how are we operating as a collective, as a family, as a culture, whatever we want to use. I think that construction is an industry that for a long time had the luxury of not having to worry about that. And then for the reason that you guys are bringing up is now kind of in the forefront of, we need to make this an awesome place to work and ensure that everyone loves coming in every day, loves the people that they work with. So that's why we love having people like you on, is like, it's such a good refresh and reminder of that spans any industry, not just the construction industry. Zach and I always leave with a ton of takeaways after these sorts of interviews. So yeah, it is awesome to hear that you guys are kind of leading from the front in that regard.
I think it's such an advantage too. When I would go to business, like I could tell, I would go to a business because I traveled for Builder Trend, and if they had words on the wall and their office seemed like a safe place, and even little things like drinks after 5 together, versus I would go to other businesses where like that stuff seemed like it was missing, and like our trainings would go so much better because they were intentional about like, this is an investment and this is what we're getting out of it. But I think what's hard for people is if you haven't done it, you don't know how to do it, you know? And so if you're doing it from the beginning, it just makes things, you know, you have that luxury. A lot of builders in construction are just reacting to the volume of trying to keep up and addressing the labor shortage by just finding bodies so that they show up to like get the job done. And that cycle is really tough to break, but it can be broken.
And toxic,
but it can be broken. Yeah. People do it, right?
I
am, you know, we just a callback to our last episode you guys were on. We talked a little bit about this and your amazing company and what you're building, but we also talked about the nonprofit that you had started, and just curious for a little update if that is progressing further or where you're at as far as that journey and that mission.
It's funny, we were just working on like a massive grant for that this morning. Yes, it's still awesome. Progressing. We're in medium stages of a building for that nonprofit, and we're working on companies related to prefab and things like that we can do inside of a building, which helps accelerate training because people can just keep doing the same thing until they learn it and then move on to a different path. So it's actually blowing up a little faster than I think that we expected it to.
All of a sudden we woke up and was like, okay,
we have a whole 501(c)(3) that is operating.
Just a couple lawyers and just like that.
Yeah, just like that. Those were the first things that came, were the lawyers. Very expensive. But it's refreshing to see it moving so fast and so many people buying into it and understanding that, like you're saying, there's a labor crisis is what I call it. And we need to be able to train people quicker And what better way than have a nonprofit that can do that and feed the entire city of that issue rather than just Blair Freeman figuring it out on the back end.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that, again, just leading from the front, there are things that we can do as an industry as a whole to address the labor crisis. I'm going to officially change my verbiage to that.
Update the marketing.
Yep, we're updating the brand.
It's not a shortage. It's a crisis.
I'm curious if there's any other kind of recruitment methods or training programs that you guys have found efficient in attracting new talent to the construction industry.
Number one is always going to be your people. Our people are our brand ambassadors. We always feel somewhat guilty when we tell people that we have a wait list of people that want to work for us. We don't have to do the formal application process in pretty much any area that we are looking to hire in. Mm-hmm. And that's because our folks are a reflection of what's going on inside of our organization. And it's unusual to have people show up so happy. That's usually like our number one compliment is either you're so fun to work with or everybody's so happy.
Yeah.
And it's because they love what they do every day. So that for us is the easiest way to attract folks and retain.
For sure. And we heard it. We do an annual St. Patty's Day get together, which was this past Friday. And we heard it time and time again, like just everybody, the compliments with our team, our team's friends coming and saying,
I want a job.
I mean, I had family members that were like, I've been trying to get a job for years. And I was like, it's fine. Just your time will come.
I'm pretty sure I picked up a senior grading person just by having a beer with them this past Friday.
But yeah, our people are amazing. And like I said earlier, just getting out to the schools, getting out into the community, letting people know what we do, who we are, what we do, having conversations like this, speaking at events. I mean, that's really, and then when people see, us, see our team, it's organic. And that's the best way for me to describe it. It's just all the people that are here, like Ashley said, we weren't necessarily advertising for the position. And it organically happened through relationships, through community. Mm-hmm. And that has kind of been the trend.
Yeah. I also say that we have a shared leadership model inside of our organization. And so if a project or a client comes to us, it's not just Miranda and I going, well, do this. It's happening. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do, even though we can't stand the person that's asking us to do it. And we know they're not going to pay the bill at the end of the day. And we know they're going to treat you like trash, but it's money. We let our team make the decision. And sometimes it's painful for us as owners because you're like, well, that's money. But usually the decisions that they make are, I would say 10 times out of 10 are spot on. Mm-hmm. And it makes it so nobody shows up to work like, oh, I have to do this. They as an organization, we as an organization get to make decisions together and they don't hear us barking, do this, do this, do this.
Yeah. They feel empowered. And I think that's the biggest thing they do. Like, well, like Ashley said, we'll come in and we'll all powwow. We'll be like, well, what do you think? Mm-hmm. How do you want to proceed? What are your thoughts? And so.
What markets do you want to expand into?
Yes.
Yeah. What things do you want to do next week that we don't do this week? It's all up to them. And I love that about our team.
Well, and they're closer to it from the day to day. And so, what they're looking for is the belief that they can do it. Or great leaders, right, say, yeah, let's do it. And then if it doesn't work, it's like, what do we learn from it? Not accosting you and saying like, you messed up, this is your fault, you cost me money. It's like, it's always an investment one way or the other. Right. Sometimes it doesn't turn out the way we want. I can just sense your genuineness just for what it's worth. Like, can I get on the, is there a wait? What's this waitlist process? Like, is you just need like a.
Well, it starts with beer or a shot. No,
just for a listener, not, I'm just, yeah. Like we're just talking as far as, what options are out there for people that listen. Cause I think that's what it is, right? Like people through word of mouth, through, wanting to hear from people they trust about people they're working for that they trust. That's what human connection is all about. So I love it. I love it.
One thing that you mentioned that I want to kind of dive into a bit more is going out into the community and having kind of these speaking engagements. You guys have both brought up multiple times on this interview so far of different things that you're doing as far as outreach. Are you working with kind of local educational institutes as well or vocational training programs to build out that whitelist and let people know that they do have an option here?
Yeah. I mean, you name it, we're doing. So in the summertime, we usually have probably 20 plus interns come in and they just get to see what we do day in and day out. And I don't know, we're doing a pretty good job of those interns converting. It's obviously they're younger, so a lot of them convert to staff. And then OPS, we are getting ready to do a student build housing with them. So that gets kids in high school ready to build homes. I mean, you name it. I'm from an organizational university standpoint. We're both closely aligned with both UNL, UNO, MCC. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of them. We're day in and day out. Our team in some regard is connected to pretty much all the educational institutions in the city.
There's a member of my team who's talked to Metro, and they have a very, and Metro's a local community college for our national listeners here, that does some really cool certification and, you know, investment. Wow, yeah. I've been super impressed with their program. So it's great to hear you guys are involved. Yeah.
It makes you want to go back to school just to learn all the stuff that they have. But you're like, I didn't learn that.
Someone on my team like asked me that. She was like, can I go to like classes during the day? I was like, I don't know if we could figure that out, but like, I wanted to say yes. I'm like, it's so cool. And she went and toured the facility. And so I love that.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're in the region, definitely look into it because there's some awesome stuff there. Former educator.
Like, they have a room that has like 50 HVAC units, and it's somebody's job to like break them. Ooh. And then a student goes through and has to fix all 50. I'm like, do that. I want to do that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's so
great. You
feel
really empowered when you can fix something 50 different ways.
Really cool. You know, one of the things too that, you know, it comes with the labor crisis and education is diversity and attracting diverse talent. You guys are a Black owned business. You obviously are staples in the community. What are some of the ways that you're kind of looking to diversify the construction industry, and kind of what's your point of view on that?
And maybe just to add on to that is what advice you have for other companies that historically have hired kind of the same kind of way, that are looking to expand their market and bring in top talent.
Mm-hmm. I think for us, the biggest thing is we do not hire exclusively within the construction industry. And so I think generationally people think that like, if you have been in construction, you can work in construction and you cannot move the other way and nobody outside can move in. And there's so many roles that are duplicable outside of the construction industry that we've found really big success in bringing that those kind of folks in. But we always say we are diverse, equitable, and inclusive as an organization, period.
Yeah.
So we don't really work at it every day. It just kind of organically happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that making sure, so for other companies, making sure that your executive team, your leadership team is diverse is huge. Because you have to have that perspective. You have to have people in those leadership roles in order to attract talent that is diverse, because people want to see, you know, they want to see people that look like them in executive roles. That perspective is huge to have in any company. And so I think that that's something that a lot of companies could do, is just diversify that leadership in those executive teams. And then you're going to start to see diverse teams rolling underneath there.
Yeah. It's also a matter of understanding what's available in the market to start, who's available. So usually there's a pretty good pulse on what's coming out of colleges, universities, trade unions, things like that, and being realistic with what is attainable in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. You can't say like, we're going to have 50% diversity, equity, and inclusion if all of the places where somebody would get their education are kicking out 10%, right? Like, we have to be realistic. And we also have to make sure that we're not just hiring a face, because you're also setting people up for failure. You have to make sure that you're hiring candidates that are suitable for the position. But there are ways to do mentorship and things like that to be intentional about it. But we're really big on right people, right place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everything that you guys have talked through as far as just like getting involved with the local community and institutes and things like that, I'd have to imagine, obviously we focus on how that's valuable for you in your role in hiring, but I'd have to imagine that's invaluable for the education community and the different trade programs and stuff like that too. So if we have people listening, it seems like a win-win to just reach out to some local colleges, local trade schools, things like that. I'd have to imagine they're going to be overjoyed to hear from you and work with you and get you in front of students that could potentially end up being a labor pool for you to choose from.
Yeah. I mean, anybody, even including you, when you put a younger face that's a little bit happier to be in the industry than maybe like a carpenter that's been working for 80 years that just is like, you have 80 years before you're going to be able to do what I can do. You know what I mean? Like, and we've all ran into that. That's not interesting. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to work in that day in and day out. So I think putting a more positive spin that's reflective of the generations that are coming into it helps make people understand that, like, oh, this is a cool gig that I can do.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it. I've talked about this on the Building Code a few times. I was public school teacher, didn't really have plans to leave public education, did not talk about trades as a potential option because I just didn't know. And now that I've been involved in the construction industry, if I went back to teaching, I would tell my students all the time that you gain skills that translate to an industry, and one of those industries that is extremely dynamic and interesting and really has a ton of opportunity as well from an ownership standpoint into a craft, honestly, is what is more akin to, and they get really good at it and they have this a beautiful, almost art-like ability to craft wood and, you know, lay tile, and there is a lot of exciting opportunities that basically we need a campaign to advertise to America that construction is rife with opportunity.
Do it.
We're starting it here on the Building Code.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Do it.
I love it.
Well, the other thing that you said, and I just love sharing this story, is looking for people that traditionally don't come from the construction industry. And this is what Zach was just talking to too. I can't remember who we had on, but they talked through during COVID times, they found a really good pipeline of wedding planners to construction project managers.
We heard that from you. We were like, oh, noted.
No, I jot that down. It's like they were looking.
We were like, do you do event planning? Come on.
Come on in. And I'm sure there's millions of examples like that. Public school teachers. Luckily, Builder Trend nabbed Zach before he had the opportunity to go somewhere else. But I mean, there's comparable skills across as long as you have the training programs to get people up to speed. And there's opportunity regardless of where you've been and where you came from.
Yeah. And there is a crisis. So right now what happens is people recycle the same folks. And we also are at a disadvantage because we partner with a lot of our competitors in certain models of how we build. And so we also can't steal from the people that we're working with every day. So we're like limited to what we can get. And so that's where kind of we've strategically had to be like, let's get outside of the industry.
I think that's a strategic advantage. That makes a lot of sense. And that's the best innovators are able to kind of get outside their boxes of like what we've traditionally done. So just our last question, we're a little bit up against the clock. We'd like to keep it, you know, short and snappy. I know we could go for 2 hours. That's why we always welcome people back. So
we can do it. We'll have a third time with you guys for sure.
That's right. And
there you go.
What is your, you know, construction industry? We've talked about interest rates. We've talked about the labor crisis, you know, the skills gap. What are your guys's, if you had to put your forecasting hats on, how do you see after IBS, after a conversation, after living, breathing the industry that you're in, for kind of what the future holds for construction? Really simple, easy question to end the episode.
For easy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see it changing like tremendously. Like right now we're in this crisis, right? But I think all the things that we're doing right now are going to be so impactful that in the next 5 to 7 years, we're going to see all the work that we're putting in right now. Those students, those kids are going to start graduating and they're going to be coming into the industry.
Yeah.
So I see that all the work we're doing now, it's going to be paying off in the next 5 to 7 years for sure.
And I'm with her when we say that it's going to change. I think the innovation is getting ready to hit construction. We've been building the same way for hundreds of years. And now we have technology and new equipment, new machinery and things like that. And I think that technology is getting ready to take over. And it's kind of like I always use the Polaroid example of like Polaroid knew that they weren't going to be able to keep the camera the same way. And they didn't evolve. And so then they pretty much eradicated themselves. And I think a lot of that's going to happen in the construction industry where folks are going to have to learn how to keep up with technology and the new innovation in the industry. And some folks are going to get left behind because they want to do it the old way.
Yeah.
Totally.
And they're going to have to learn differently.
Yeah. These gamers are going to come out and they're going to know how to do all the stuff.
Gamify construction. And I can't wait.
I love it.
I keep saying I'm going to go back to tech school because I want to be with it.
Yeah.
I want to know what's going on in the IT world.
Yeah.
Yes. It sounds like all four of us may be going back to school here in the not too distant future. We'll
My rule is no papers.
No,
if I have to write a paper, I'm not coming back.
I would have been your least favorite teacher.
Oh no!
Those blue books in college trauma.
Yeah, that gives me. You said UNL. That gives me flashbacks too. It was like the blue books.
That is trauma on paper. That's where anxiety came from in my life. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today and for making time out of your busy schedule. Really, really appreciate it. Always an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And I think we're definitely because we're already over time and we got through all the questions, though, which we did get yelled at before. They said, Zach and Charlie, you guys always go off script. Please,
there's no yelling.
We write through these questions intentionally. Please ask them. So we have to get you guys back on again. But thank you very much for the time today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us again.
Okay, we'll see you soon.
All right. We just had Ashley Miranda here, Blair Freeman Group here, Omaha, Nebraska. We nailed the intro. We nailed the interview. Charlie, bring it home, baby.
Well, I mean, giving a lot of credit to us, I actually think they nailed the interview. We just
great point.
We were the vessel that asked the leading questions, kind of. So minor credit to us, major credit to them. But no, it was an awesome interview. We talked about it on there, but the reason that we had them back was for a second time was they're just so inspiring. I think is a good word to describe.
Popped in my head.
Not just for our listeners, but for us as well too. I always come out of these with a ton of different notes and takeaways of things that we can apply to our business here at Builder Trend. So hopefully our listeners also picked up on some things that they can apply to their businesses as well. But you just talk about seeing a problem and not using it as an excuse, but using it as an opportunity. That was what really resonated with me as they talked through the labor crisis of this is something that everyone's facing right now. They are taking it head on and going out and meeting with different schools and different community groups. And what they said, been on like 20 different speaking engagements in the last month. And they have, I think every business out there, regardless of construction or not, would love to have a wait list of applicants that want to apply and work for them. So clearly what they're doing works. And I think a lot of people can use what they said as takeaways and apply it to their own community and their own business and just continue to tackle this labor crisis as they alluded to from the front.
Absolutely. It's really fun to get to talk to really successful people who have just a vision that you want to follow. It just goes to show that people, they crave that community, that genuineness, that purpose is probably the best way to describe it. And I think they do a fantastic job bringing that to their place of work, but also taking it outside. And that's really special. And they deserve a ton of credit for everything they've built together. And it's always great to catch up with people and hear follow-ups of what they've been working on. And the other thing about problems in society historically is they're going to get solved one way or the other. And it takes real people with real conviction to go through and solve those problems together. And it's really interesting to hear that we're already laying the groundwork, and their ending message about what's to come is, to me, invigorating change. We're going to bring the construction industry forward. And I think that aligns really well with Builder Transmission and what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
But you know, Miranda and Ashley, shout out to both of you for being just absolute pioneers, leaders, amazing business owners. And it was a pleasure having you on the Building Code, and you're always welcome back, as we said a few times, but genuinely, we hope everyone out there also enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. And it sounds like we could have a cool podcast mini series coming up with the four of us going back to school. Can Zach fix 50 HVAC units?
Can I get Ashley to write a paper in a blue book?
Yeah.
That could be like the sub series.
Tons of good segments that are ripe for the picking. So we'll keep you updated on how those progress. But until next time, I'm Charlie Burt-Wissel.
And I'm Zach Witowicz.
And this is The Building Code.
We'll see you later.